with a high near 60. This is your forecast for KPFT. Have a great day, Houston.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. That means it's 5 p.m. on a Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio. Well, happy Thanksgiving. I'm your host today, Eric Keen, and I'm backed up by a talented team here where we celebrate the power of story by featuring guests who will amuse us and entertain us with their stories. Well, it was Aesop who once said, "Good things come in small packages." And there's a lot of truth to that. Things like cute little puppies, diamond rings, Olympic gymnasts, and another thing that can be just as valuable in a small package is a story. To prove that, all of our stories today will be 3 minutes or less. I call this episode Stories for People with Short Attention Spans, people such as myself. So we got a big variety of guests from Tennessee to Tel Aviv who'll deliver these snappy little tales one after the other. So hold on to your hats and let's get right to these stories. Our first guest is Sefi Sochat Berry. Sefi was born in Massachusetts, but raised in Israel since she was four. She teaches in various fields, including movement, teacher training, and English to children. And Sefi also conducts a unique workshop called Dancing with Stories. Hey, Sefi, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Hi, everyone. This is Sefi Sochat Berry speaking from Netanya.
You have a project called Dancing with Stories? Yeah, that sounds like something this program would be interested in. What's that all about?
I'm a dance instructor and I'm a storyteller. I combine these two things together and I created a workshop where I tell a story and the people dance along with the story. I choose music. Mm-hmm. And it makes the people actually feel that they're part of the story and the story comes to life.
Well, that's a great idea. So it's a story simultaneously with music and a dance. So you're not here to dance. You're here to tell stories. So let's hear a story.
Okay. Well, when Eric contacted me and asked me to tell a story, I just got off the phone with my brother. My mom was a very sick woman. And after she gave birth to me, doctors warned her from having additional high-risk pregnancy. But she had her own plans, and she said she'd rather die in labor and not leave her daughter, meaning me, an only child.
That is heart-rending.
Yeah. Well, 4 years later, I got a present. I got my brother, Gary.
Wow.
And you know what? She was right. Because now both my parents passed away, and I couldn't even imagine myself without my brother. So thinking about this, my mom used to collect stories, and she had a booklet with tons of stories. And one of the stories I found there is a 200-year-old story that is called The Two Brothers. So I thought this would be perfect for now.
Well, let's hear Two Brothers.
The Two Brothers. A long time ago, before the temple, Beit HaMikdash was built in Jerusalem with two brothers. And they're both farmers. They farmed together the wheat fields they inherited from their parents. One brother was married, and he had a large family, and the other lived alone when the harvest time arrived. Each was blessed with a bountiful crop. They divided the crop into two piles, and they stored them in separate places, separate barns. Every night, the brothers would lie awake in their bed with thoughts. The unmarried brother, observing his good fortune, thought to himself, God has blessed him with more than he actually needed. My brother has many children to feed, and surely he and his wife need more crop than I. Meanwhile, the married brother thought to himself that he was fortunate to have children who will care for him when he will be old. And he said, my brother is alone, and he has no one to take care of him. Surely he needs more crop than I. So each night, long after midnight, the married brother would gather bundles of wheat and carry them across the field and quietly place them in the brother's barn. And likewise, the single brother would gather some of his bundles late at night, and he would sneak into his brother's barn, and he would leave some of the wheat over there. Years passed, each unaware of the other's generosity. Until one clear night, the brothers just bumped into each other. They looked each other in surprise. Only then they realized what has been happening for all those years. They dropped the wheat bundles, and they fell into each other's arms with a loving embrace. They started weeping, and they realized the true love between brothers.
Mm.
So does the legend say there was a glow of brotherly love lighting up the mountain sky? Who these two brothers were, we don't know. But it was on that mountaintop, says the Midrash, that God decided that Beit HaMikdash, the holy temple, should be built.
Ah, yeah.
Now, Eric, if anyone here has a brother or sister you're particularly fond of, I think this is the perfect time to pick up the phone and tell them how much you love them.
That's fantastic, Steffi. Really appreciate that story. And yeah, it got me thinking of my own brother, because he and I butted heads a lot our whole lives. So I'm going to send him this story. I understand you have another one. Let's hear your next story.
Oh, my next story is something totally different. Once, Mullah Nasr al-Din went to a fair with a bunch of friends. In one of the corners, people were shooting arrows, and Mullah was encouraged by the crowd to join the competition. He took the first shot, and the arrow fell short. So the crowd started laughing, and Mullah turned around and he said, this is what happens when you live with an inferiority complex. You cannot reach the target because your heart is not wholly into it.
Mm.
The next arrow flew far away from the target. Mullah turned immediately and he said, this is what happens to a man that he thinks very highly of himself. He runs so fast, he bypasses the goal. Now Mullah shot the third arrow, hitting the target exactly in the center. He turned over with a smile on his face and he said, and this is me.
That is great. Reminds me of Goldilocks. Not too hot, not too cold, just right.
Yeah.
Well, Steffi, we really enjoyed those stories.
It was a great pleasure. I love this invitation. I definitely gained from talking to you and getting to know about the program that encourages storytellers. I think it's very important. I think the collaboration between storytellers around the world is very important.
Yes.
So I wish all the listeners, good evening and good night here from Israel.
Thank you for those sentiments, Steffi, and thanks for being here.
Shalom.
Shalom. Well, our next guest is Lauren Nimi. Lauren is a longtime storyteller of personal stories and reimagined folktales. He's also a poet and author of several books on storytelling, including What Haunts Us, which is available on Amazon. Warren, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here and share a few stories, chat a bit.
Warren, I see that storytelling is a big part of your life. What effect do you like your stories to have on your listeners?
Storytelling is a big part of my life. I've been doing it for over 40 years now. And on some level, what I want my stories to do is create a little space for listeners to imagine their lives or other lives and what the meaning of it is.
So let's hear a story. You have one here called The Rake.
Yeah, this story is a story from my childhood. And I think that's all I'm going to say in the front end. It was one of those October afternoons. You know, the sun was coming through the trees like honey, melting, illuminating the leaves, red, yellow. I was over at Tommy Johnson's house. We were playing in the leaves. He and I would chase each other and throw leaves at each other. We were doing what kids do when they're 6 or 7 years old, which is how old I was. And his brother was raking leaves into piles and then stepped back to let us jump in them. All of a sudden, his brother stopped raking, and it was because his girlfriend came. I don't remember what her name was or anything about her other than that she had a pink sweater and she sat on the stairs. And Tommy Johnson's brother, he stood up and he did something I had never seen before. He took the rake, and it was a long rake with a wooden handle and metal tines. And he raised it up and he balanced the handle of the rake on his chin, his head tilted back, the rake up in the air like he was going to rake the clouds, his arms outstretched. And that was the moment. That was the moment when the handle left his chin and seemed to move upward very, very slowly. And as it moved upward, the head of the rake turned and came down and it hit him in the forehead. He crumpled to the ground and lay on the ground and he popped his head off of the rake and there was holes and there was blood streaming down. And the girlfriend was, she was screaming. And pretty soon his mother was there and she grabbed him. He was kind of a big kid, but she grabbed him and she was running down the street with him in her arms, yelling, "Doctor, we need a doctor." And the girlfriend was running after him with her hands cupped beneath his head, catching blood as though they could use it again. And Tommy and I, we sat there looking at the whole thing. We went over and we looked at the rake. I looked at the blood running down those metal tines onto the yellow leaves. And I thought to myself, how pretty it was.
Well, that's a very visual story there, Lauren. I could picture it all the way through. Tommy's brother was trying to impress that girl, or why was he doing that?
Yeah, he was apparently he was trying to impress that girl, show her a new trick.
Okay, great story, Lauren. Now let's hear another one. You have one called The Math Lesson.
Yeah, this one's a little later. This story comes from when I was in sixth grade, going to school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Our Lady of Fatima, Dominican nuns. This was in the spring. I was sitting in the class and I was actually looking out at the playground, which was basically asphalt. And there was a blue bottle fly at the window. And I thought to myself, you know, the fly wants to be out and so do I. When all of a sudden I heard the nun, Sister Carmita, say, "Tony Martinez, come to the board." And everyone stopped and everyone looked because Tony Martinez was the guy who sat at the very last chair at the very last row. He was older than us. This was probably his second or third time around in sixth grade. He went up to the board slowly. And there on the board was a math problem. And Sister said, "Work the math problem." And he just stared at it. He stared at the board and he stared at her. And then he did something that no one expected. He reached into his pocket and he pulled out of his pocket and he snapped it open, a switchblade knife. Ooh. And the nun looked at him and she took the chalk and she put the chalk in one hand. So he had chalk in one hand and the knife in the other. And she said, "You must choose, Mr. Martinez."
Wow.
"And you must choose now." The silence in the room was incredible. Even the fly had stopped. Tony put the chalk down and folded the knife and walked out the door. He never came back. We never saw him again. And the nun, she said, "Carmen, come and work the math problem." And Carmen went up to the board and worked it. And everyone thought things would return to normal. But somehow it had all changed.
Well, whatever happened to that boy? He left the class. He never came back.
He never came back. He basically dropped out of Catholic school.
Well, hopefully he chose the chalk and not the knife after that. Well, that's very symbolic too. There seems to be a lot of good stories about Catholic schools, about kids and the nuns. And, you know, I've heard a lot that really depict the nuns negatively, like they're some kind of monsters, but it's good.
Well, there are moments where they have been or can be. I mean, when I was in eighth grade, the nuns and I did not have a good relationship at all. They threatened to throw me out of school 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I've heard those stories too. Now, your next story has got an unusual title. It's called simply The Pickle. What's The Pickle?
When I first started telling stories many, many years ago, you know, I started like most people do. I was doing schools and libraries and churches, and I wasn't really telling so much personal stories. I was mostly telling folk tales and imaginative tales. And this story came from that period of time, and it came from an experience I had at a baseball game.
Yeah.
So there was an old man who had a garden, a lovely garden in his backyard. He had tomatoes. He had salad fixings. He had some cucumbers, but they weren't doing well. He was kind of worried about it. It's like he liked his cucumbers. One day, while he was watching the news, he heard that there had been a leak at the nuclear power plant.
Oh.
And he thought to himself, well, that's interesting. And then he remembered somewhere he had read that if you used irradiated water with plants, it improved them. And so he got in his car and he drove downstream of the nuclear power plant, and he looked at the water. He couldn't see anything, but he took a couple of 5-gallon jugs and filled them with water and brought them home. And he began to use that water specifically on the cucumbers.
Oh,
and it seemed to work. The cucumbers began to grow. Well, not all of them, but one of them. Pretty soon it was a good size, you know, the size of a cucumber should be. And then the next day, that cucumber was as big as a watermelon. And every day it grew bigger. He did not see at night that it sort of emitted in a little glow by itself. He just continued to water it and wonder how big it could get. Well, when it became the size of the Volkswagen, it began to crush every other plant. And he noticed that it had ambulation on its own. It began to move around in the garden. It broke through the fence. It headed down the alley. And as it headed down the alley, it continued to grow to a monstrous size, to the King Kong of cucumbers, to the Godzilla of cucumbers. It was down there on the street, headed towards downtown. And I'll tell you, there were police cars all around it. People had drawn their guns and they were shooting at it. Shooting a cucumber has no effect. The cucumber continued to grow and continued to go where it would, and people were desperate. Well, there was an old lady who said she knew how to deal with cucumbers, but whenever she did, she needed polka music. And so they assembled a polka band down on 5th and Main, and it began to play a nice, happy tune, a tune that made the cucumber stop. And the woman went with her carving knife and several other people, and they went and they began to whittle away at the cucumber from down below. And the cucumber went down and down and down as the polka music went on and on and on. And pretty soon there was a huge pile of green glowing cucumber, but there was no menace. Then the question became, what do you do with it? And I'll tell you what they did with it. I was at the ballpark the other day. I ordered a hot dog. And with that hot dog came some mustard, some onions, and came some green glowing relish.
Ooh.
And I said to myself, ah, the mystery is solved.
The mystery. That's a true story, isn't it, Lauren?
Metaphorically.
I'm sure it really happened. Okay. You know, I tell you, if I ever run into a giant mutated cucumber, I'm going to play some polka music. I love it. Well, Lauren, I really enjoyed all your stories. So thank you for being here on So What's Your Story?
Well, thank you for having me. You know, if I had to offer some advice to anyone who's listening, it is do not be afraid of your stories. Your stories are powerful and they are fun.
yeah. Do not be afraid of your stories. That's great words to end this segment with. Thanks again, Lauren, and you take care.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye. Well, our next guest today is Judy England McCarthy. Judy's professional career as a storyteller slash performance artist commenced in 2009. Her background includes published author and poet, workshop facilitator, and her website is called beginwithastory.com. Judy, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you for having me, Eric. I appreciate being here.
Now, from your bio, I see you're also a poet. And how has that experience given you ideas for stories?
Well, actually, a lot of my ideas come from the poetry. I have published a book based on my poem, and it allows me to start playing around with the words, and children especially like rhyme. So yeah. My poetry does help.
All right, Judy. Well, you got a couple of interesting stories for us. And the first one here is called The Learned Scholar. Let's hear that story.
Okay. The Learned Scholar is a Jewish folk tale. And one day there was a scholar from Constantinople. And this scholar, well, he wanted to cross the Black Sea, so he got in a boat. But he was a little pretentious. You know what I mean? Pretentious. So when he got in the boat, he said, "My dear man," to that boat person. And he said, "Would you please tell me, what do you know of philosophy?" Well, the boatman, being a commoner and not doing much with his life other than bringing people from one place to another, said, "Well, actually, I've never studied philosophy." "Oh, terrible, terrible. You never studied philosophy? Then, in my opinion, you have wasted one quarter of your life." Well, as they traveled a little further, the scholar said again to the boatman, "Well, how about history? You must have studied some history, my good man." Shrugging his shoulders, the boatman said, "No, I've never studied history. I just live my life simply." "Oh, terrible, terrible. Well, in my opinion, you have wasted at least two quarters of your life." Oh. A little time passed, and that wasn't enough for the scholar. He said, "Well, then how about science? You do understand about science, do you not?" "Actually, no. All I do is row people from one place to another and take them safely there." "Oh, well, that's terrible, terrible. You, in my opinion, have wasted three quarters of your life." But before the scholar could say another word, the wind picked up and a big wave overturned the boat and it capsized. The poor boatman was swept farther away and he shouted to the scholar, "The shore isn't too far. Swim, swim for your life." The scholar said, but I never learned how to swim." "What? Terrible, terrible. Then because of that omission, I would say you have now wasted 4/4 of your life."
You know, Judy, I love stories like that. It's very common in folktales, stories where the big-headed, important person, they get their comeuppance.
I think, yeah, I tend to be attracted to wisdom tales or things that help people understand humanity better.
Yeah. Well, Judy, I guess I know you got another story here. It's called Holding Up the Sky. Can we hear that
one? Yes. Yes. It's a fable from China. One day, elephant went by and saw little hummingbird on his back with his feet up in the air. He looked at the hummingbird. He said, "What are you doing, hummingbird?" "Oh, well, I heard that the sky might fall today. And just in case, I'm ready doing my little bit in case it does happen." Laughed the elephant. "You think your little tiny feet can make any difference if the sky were to really fall?" "Well," replied the hummingbird, "one must do what one can, and I'm doing what I can to make a difference." The elephant paused for a moment, and then he got down on his back and put his feet up in the air.
Wow. You know, that story, Judy, it reminds me of the one where there's a boy, there's all these starfish on the beach that got stranded, they got washed up, and the boy starts throwing one at a time back in. And guy comes up and says, there's thousands of starfish here. He said, you're not making any difference throwing one in. And the boy picks up one, he throws it in the water, and he says, well, I made a difference to that one.
Exactly.
Well, Judy, I really enjoyed your stories today. And before we let you go, do you have anything, any projects you'd like to tell our listeners about?
Well, actually, I've just launched two children's books. So if you have children or know somebody with children, go to my website, beginwithastory.com, and check them out.
Great. Beginwithastory.com. Thanks again, Judy. And thank you for all you do for the storytelling world.
Well, I'm your host, Eric Keen, and you're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget, KPFT's free internet on HD2 meets all your needs for the arts, news, and education. The sponsor of our show, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is a great place to learn about the art of storytelling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month, and you can visit their website at houstonstorytellers.org for all the information about upcoming events or how to become a member. Also on that same website, go to the heading Radio Program, and you'll find the recordings of all of our past So What's Your Story programs going all the way back to 2008. And you can go to our Facebook page called So What's Your Story. There you can leave comments and suggestions. Another way to get involved is by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. Our friends at The Moth are back to running live shows at The Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of every month. So go check out the stories there. The next one will be December 14th. Well, today we're catering to everybody with a short attention span, which I think is pretty much all of us these days. We're doing this by featuring stories of 3 minutes or less from a multitude of storytellers. And our next guest is Rena Chalet. Rena is originally from Highland Park, Illinois, but she moved to Israel, where she's lived most of her life. Rena is a storyteller, a voice and movement instructor, and a museum guide. She's a retired college teacher of Bible studies, and she's always been intrigued by the character of Elijah the prophet. Rena, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Oh, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Now, I remember from Sunday school something about Elijah, but I don't remember much about him. But what about Elijah do you find appealing?
Elijah is a very dramatic person. He's a healer. He brings children back to life. He's full of hellfire and brimstone and fighting against the idol worshippers. When he dies, he goes off in a chariot. He's just an amazing, amazing character and a little bit frightening as well.
So your story here, appropriately, it's about Elijah. So let's hear that story.
Okay, well, Elijah is not the main character of this story, but he's certainly very important. The story is about Jacob, who was a poor, blind man living in Jerusalem, and who lived from hand to mouth. Sometimes people gave him work in the open air markets. He would carry crates from one place to another, and people took pity on him. But that's how he lived. He was poor. He was blind. He was married, but he had no children. And it's very interesting that Jacob, even though he was so poor, whenever he encountered or he heard the story of somebody who needed help in some way, he would always help that person. Even if he had very little money, he would give something to somebody who he felt needed it more. And every day he would pray, because that's what Jews often do, especially Jews living in Jerusalem. They pray three times a day, and he would pray for some improvement in his situation, that somehow he would get a better paying job, that maybe his wife could have children, that if only he could heal in some way so that he would be able to see. But none of this happened until one day, just as Jacob was about to leave for the open air market, there was a knock on the door. He opened the door, and he heard a voice, a very deep voice, saying, "Jacob, I am Elijah, and I have been sent to you by God to grant you a wish. God has seen how generous you are and how gentle you are and how loving you are, and he has heard your prayers, and he has agreed to grant you a wish." Said Jacob, "One wish?" He said, "But here I am, I'm blind, and I have no money, and I have no children, and just one wish?" "Yes," said Elijah. And so Jacob said, "Well, I have to talk to my wife. Can you give me 24 hours? Come back tomorrow morning, and I'll give you my answer." And that's what happened. All day and all night, Jacob and his wife talked back and forth. If they have children, but they have nothing to feed them, what would be the point? If he has sight, but all he sees is the poverty, and he sees his wife suffering because she has no children, what's the point? And if he has money, but he has nobody to no children to share it with, what's the point? And they went on and on and on like this right through the night, until his wife said, "I have an idea." And in the morning, when Elijah came and knocked on the door, and he said, "Jacob, have you decided what your wish will be?" And Jacob said, "Yes." He said, "I would like to see my children eating off of golden plates."
Aha. Yeah. So he captured all of it in one wish. Yeah, I could really, while you're telling that story, Rena, I could really feel Jacob's agony. Like, what am I going to wish for? It was almost like it'd be better not to have a wish.
Right, because whatever you get, you're still going to be left with this dissatisfaction, because you can't really enjoy the thing that you get.
Okay, Rena, well, I understand. You got another story for us today, another little short one. Let's hear that story.
Well, you know, Eric, how Jews are known for learning and for study and for intellectual pursuits. You know how every Jewish mother wants her son to be a doctor or a lawyer. And so it's been like that forever, including in this little Eastern European town where everybody was busy studying and learning and delving into the secrets of the Bible and of rabbinic teachings. And this town, like many other towns, had somebody who wasn't quite as smart as everybody else. And people used to kind of laugh at him or make fun of him. And he got very tired of this. And he said, I'll show them how smart I am. He said, "I know that passage. There's a passage in the Bible that says, God looks after fools, and I'm going to prove to them. I'm going to climb up to the roof of the synagogue, and I'm going to jump off the roof. Now, if nothing happens to me, then I'll know that I'm a fool. But if I break a leg, then everybody will know that I'm as smart as they are." And that's what he did. He climbed up to the top of the roof, and people saw that he was there, and they gathered around. They said, "What are you going to do? What are you doing? don't jump. What are you? And he jumped. And he broke two legs.
Ooh.
And they gathered around him and they said, why did you do that? And he said, well, you know, I always knew I was smart, but I didn't know how smart I was.
I got to remember that one, Rena. I love it. He paid the price, but at least he was smart, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Rena, I've really enjoyed both of your stories and appreciate you being here on So What's Your Story?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. And I love radio.
All
right. I'm so happy to be on the radio. Thank
and
you.
We're happy to have you on it. Our next guest today is Ed Lewis. Ed is a retired early childhood professor who's been telling stories around the world since 1990. He specializes in personal stories and tall tales. Ed is a board member of the Storytelling Association of California and the liaison to the National Storytelling Network. Hey, Ed, it's good to have you here. So what's
Thanks.
Your story?
Appreciate you asking me to join.
Ed, I see you tell both true stories, but also these tall tales. Do you have a preference on one or the other, or do you?
I like them both equally. And whenever I do my tall tales, they often relate to a real personal adventure that I have, because most of my traveling has been adventure traveling, like going up the length of the Amazon River, hiking the Inca Trail, living in a cave in the Canary Islands for 6 months. I have those adventure stories, and I like to tweak them sometimes into a tall tale.
Ah, yes. Sometimes it's irresistible. Embellish it a little bit. Well, you have a story here. It seems to overlap both the truth and the fiction that we're talking about. Let's hear that story.
All right. Back in the ancient time of 1980, I was visiting an old army buddy in the Arkansas Ozarks. Now, he was going to have 30 people from his holler come in for a feast that night, and he tasked me with catching enough bass to feed the entire holler. So I took his bass boat and I headed up the river, and within 1 hour, I had caught 5 good-sized bass. But I was out of bait, and 5 for 30 people in the holler wasn't enough. So, you know, you don't know me very well, but I'm a clever kind of guy. And I'm looking around for some bait, and I see this frog laying on a log. And I get ready to go grab that frog, and I realize it's not moving because it's in the mouth of a poisonous cottonmouth snake. Well, I know a lot about snakes, too. So I grabbed that snake by the jaw, and I held tight. I was young and strong. And if you do that, it can't bite you if you're strong enough. So I ripped out that frog. I threw it in the bait bucket. And the plan was to drop that snake into the river. But it was moving all around and by my face. And I didn't know what to do. So, but again, I told you I'm clever. And I reached down into my boat and I unscrewed the lid of my Jack Daniels that I always carried. And I poured a shot right down the gullet of that snake. And that snake, its eyes just rolled back in its head and went limp. Had this huge grin, and I laid it right back down into the river. Well, I cut up that frog. I went fishing. I caught 5 more good-sized bass in another hour, but I was out of bait again. And so, you know, I've got to get some more bait. 10 fish is not enough for 30 people. And you're going to find this hard to believe, because I even find it hard to believe. I felt this little nudging alongside my leg, and I looked down. And there's that cottonmouth snake, and it's got a big bullfrog in its mouth. And it looks up at me, and it looks down at that 5th of Jack Daniels. And it did that a couple times, but I finally figured it out. So I took that lid, and I unscrewed it, and I grabbed that snake in a vice-like grip, just in case. But it was limp. It spit that bullfrog right into my bait bucket. I gave it 3 shots this time. And, oh, man, I don't know if you've ever seen a snake grin, but it had the greatest grateful grin that you've ever seen. And I just dropped it right back into the river. Now, I'll tell you what, if you ever want to go fishing with me, I can get the best bait. And all you have to do is bring along a 5th of Jack Daniels.
Sounds like a deal, Ed. So that might have been a little embellishment there.
Sure.
You got another story here. It's I guess it's about your high school years. Could you tell us that story?
All right. Well, in junior high school, I had it made. I grew up in the town of Tacoma, Washington, a small town about 30 miles from Seattle. And I was a baseball star. I was a musician. I had formed a rock and roll band. I was popular. I had a nice girlfriend. And then in ninth grade, my last year of junior high, my parents moved to Seattle, Washington.
Oh my!
Now, I was a greaser kid with the DA, the cool DA in the back, you know, and leathers. And I came into this Ivy League school, and these were all Harvard-bound kids. Nice button-down shirts and cardigans and girls with saddle shoes. And it wasn't my style, but I knew how to get even with my parents and get back to Tacoma. So the third day in school, I figured out how I was going to do that. So I was in the math class. I figured this teacher is the one to try this on. He's up at the board writing, and I raised my hand. I said, hey, Mr. Moffitt, I got something I got to say. And he said, oh, okay, fine. What do you have to say? You are a blanket a-hole, and this is the worst, stupidest group of kids that I've ever been around. And I got exactly what I wanted. They sent me to the principal's office. They called my father. I got suspended for 2 days, and I knew that this is going to be it. We were going to move back to Tacoma. Yeah, right. That's ninth grade logic. I did decide that I still was going to get even with my parents. And so by the time I was a senior in high school, I had a 1.2 grade point average. And I joined a motorcycle gang with our leader, Elvin Dick, who was the only one of the 10 of us who had a motorcycle. But we were cool. And of course, I blamed my parents, but I'm sure there's plenty of blame to go around.
Ah, yes. Well, Ed, thanks for those stories. And now, before we let you go, I see you do these like tall tales. Now, here in Houston, we got this annual event. It's called the Liars Contest. So I think that's basically the same thing. Those things are a lot of fun. So you're involved in those too?
I am. In fact, I'm also on the board of the Sacramento Storytelling Guild, which is my local group. And we put on a liars contest every year, and we actually pay the winner $100. We have a little competition, and there's other events in different groups that you can enter liars contests.
Right. Okay, Ed, thanks again. We loved your stories, and thanks for being here on So What's Your Story?
All right. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to hearing more of your stories and stories from other tellers in your group.
That sounds great.
And our next guest tonight here on So What's Your Story is Banu Mati. Banu Mati, welcome to So What's Your Story.
Hello, Rick. Thank you very much for having me here. I'm so excited. And my name is Banu Mati. I'm a professional storyteller from India. I tell stories to all age group through my company called Fables and Tales, where I tell short and long tales. I love to tell stories to children, adults, and senior citizens. I also conduct storytelling training for all age groups, including the teachers.
The storytelling is a big part of your life.
Oh, yeah. We all are storytellers, you know.
Well, you got a story up here for us. We'd love to hear. Why don't you tell us this story?
Okay, so this is a story about two men. A long time ago, there were two men stayed next to each other. One was a very rich man with his family and children. The neighbor was a poor man with his wife and children. The rich man fed his children with all delicious stuffs, while the poor man, he could hardly feed them one meal a day. The rich man and his children looked so thin and pale and no cheer on their face, while the poor man's children, in spite of no food, they looked so cheerful and bubbling with energy always. The rich man, he was so curious to know how his neighbor, the poor man's children, are so good and cheerful all the time. One day, he decided to go and ask the poor man. He went and knocked at the door. "Sir, I live at the next door, and I'm so curious to know how your children are so happy and cheerful all the time." "Oh, sir, that you ask me," started to speak the poor man to the rich man. Yes. "What do you feed your children? Tell me fast. Tell me the menu." "Sir, I just feed only one thing to my children." "What is that? Where do you get? Is it available in the market? Tell me." "Sir, I just feed my children with my tongue." "What? A tongue? Oh, that's so nice of you. So kind of you. Thank you so much for telling the secret. I'll go and feed my children with tongue." And soon went to the market. He bought tongue meat from all the animals that were available. He brought them home. He chopped them, washed them, and cooked them. He made tongue soup. He made tongue curry. He made tongue fry and tongue everything. Well, the children ate. The children drank. The children tasted. And they ate and ate and ate for 1 week. Still, there was no change in their body or in their face. There was no cheer at all. Surprised and shocked and annoyed, rich man went to the poor man's door and knocked at it and banged. Poor man slowly opened the door. "Yes, sir. Welcome. How can I help you today?" "Well, you have helped me already, but it's not working. You told me a lie, isn't it?"
"Sir, never ever I tell a lie. Please tell me, what has happened?"
"You told that you feed your children with tongue and I fed my children. I don't find any change in them. Tell me the truth."
"Sir, I told you the truth. I always feed my children with my tongue. Yes, that's the truth."
"How do you feed? With your tongue, huh? Tell me."
"Sir, I feed my children with my tongue, which I mean, I speak with my children. I talk every day. I sing with them. I also tell them stories. Whenever I tell something, my children used to imagine. My children used to visualize. And my children used to experience whatever I say. So that is why I told you that I feed my children with my tongue."
"Oh, that is what the secret is. Very good. Let me start doing the same with my children." I need not tell you that the rich man did found his children cheerful and healthy very soon. Hope you like the story.
I love that story. Were stories a big part of your life growing up?
It's part of my life, yes. Why? Because it's because of my daughter. So she is 11 years old now, and right from her birth, made me as a storyteller. So I started learning to tell stories for her and because of her.
Well, I really enjoyed your storytelling tonight, Banumati. But before we let you go, I understand you have a YouTube channel you'd like to share with us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a great experience connecting with you, Mr. Eric. Actually, I have a YouTube channel, which is called Fables and Tales. And you can watch many, many stories in that.
Fables and Tales. I'm going to check that out.
Thank you so much. Hope you all like the stories.
We loved them. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, our next guest today is Dennis Boyne. Dennis is a seasoned storyteller and founder of the Lehigh Valley Story Slam. He has taught storytelling workshops at Lafayette, Marywood, and Kutztown Universities. He's the winner of the Scranton and Lancaster Story Slam and a former member of the improv group Improvolution in New York. Hey, Dennis, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Hey, well, thank you for having me, and hello to Houston out there. I have relatives in Houston, so I hope they'll listen to it.
Oh, you do? Yeah, yeah. You better tell them that this show is coming up. Dennis, I see you've kind of lived a double life. You've been involved in the corporate world for years, but then all of a sudden you kind of branched into show business. So what motivated you to make this transition?
Well, I come from a show business family. My grandparents were in vaudeville. My grandfather actually was a traffic manager for Ringling Brothers Circus. So it really runs in the blood. And I took up singing, and I was with a band while I was in high school. Not that I was a good singer, but I owned a station wagon and I could move the instrument.
Wow. So you have roots in vaudeville and the circus. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you got an interesting little story for us, it sounds like. Let's hear it.
Well, I want to tell you a little bit about my cousin Lucy and her husband Bob. They're wonderful people, but when they had their first child, they really became quite anal about it, and they were very strict. They read the Dr. Spock book. They wanted to make sure that we took sanitizer anytime that they were near their kid and all of that. He was a good kid, and they were good parents, but they were a little bit overprotective of the child. And, you know, when he was 6 years old and he was out playing with his friend, he came home and he said to his mom, "Hey, Mom, where do I come from?" Well, Lucy was just absolutely prepared. She said, "Come into the living room," and she sat him down and she got out a book, How to Tell Your Child from the Birds and the Bees, and illustrated and went over the whole thing. She made sure that she said, "You have to be in love to do it properly." And the six-year-old kid looked at her and she said, "Now, do you understand?" And he said, "No, I don't." She said, "Well, what don't you understand?" He said, "Well, I was talking to Billy and he says he comes from Cleveland. I just want to know where I come from."
Yeah.
Three kids afterwards, and whenever that question would come up, "Where do I come from?" she'd say, "Eastern Pennsylvania. Now move on."
Yeah. That's always a big moment when you got to tell them the story about that. And remember with my son, it came a lot earlier than I thought, you know, by the time they're 12 or 13, but geez, he's yeah. Like five. Oh, you got another story for us today, Dennis. And it is a story about nutty fetishes. I can't wait to hear this story about nutty fetishes. Let's hear it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to disappoint a lot of people because they're going to think that I'm going to say something weird about fetishes. But one of the fetishes I have is that when I go to a meeting and I don't have a pen, it drives me crazy. And one day I had to go to a board meeting and I reached in my briefcase and I did not have a pen. And I was so upset because I don't like borrowing pens. I borrowed a pen from somebody and it was the Mont Blanc that their mother gave them and I lost it or broke it or whatever. I just was very upset. But right across from where I was going was a pharmacy. So I said, "Well, I'll go buy a pen." So I went in and it was a weird time to go in because nobody was in the store except me. And the clerk was behind the counter and she was on the phone. And she looked at me and just kept talking. And finally she said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Yes, do you have any pens?" And she said, "Aisle 7. So I walked down aisle 7 And I couldn't find any pens. I thought, well, maybe she meant aisle six. And I went down aisle six. I couldn't find a pen. And I went back, and she said she was still on the phone. And now she looked at me. She was really upset because she got a deal with me. And she says, can I help you, sir? I said, I am looking for pens. And she said, aisle seven, right in the middle. So I go down to aisle seven, and sure enough, there's no pens. So now I'm a little angry. So I went up to her, and she's on the phone, and she said, I'm going to have to call you back. What is it, sir? And I said, I'm sorry, ma'am. You're going to have to show me. I can't find the pens. So she said, follow me. And she walks down aisle seven. She turns on, and she pulls out a box of Depends diapers. And she said, you take an extra large, don't you? So I'm holding the box of Depends diapers, and one of the people that was going to go to the meeting walks in while I'm holding the diapers. So I put it down, and I said, can I borrow a pen? And that's my story.
Miscommunication. That's the root of a lot of good stories, miscommunication. Well, Dennis, we really enjoyed your stories today. And before we let you go, could you, do you have any projects you'd like our listeners to know about?
Well, right now I'm in the process of finishing a novel called A Family Journey. It has to deal with three generations of family dynamics. And it's an awful lot of fun. It should be out on Amazon in about another, I would say, 2-3 months.
Okay, great. The Family Journey. Okay, Dennis, hey, it's been a delight having you here today. Thanks so much for being on So What's Your Story?
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's our show for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed our short little stories from our multitude of storytellers all over the world. And next week, Mary Edgerton will be here with a whole new show full of good stories. And stay tuned, because Charles Hightower is up next with a cool mix of soul music on R&B Gold. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday life. And be sure to tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story. This is Eric Keene, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after.
KPFT listeners, this is DJ Metalord, host of Sweet Nightmares Radio Show. Sweet Nightmares Radio Show has been supporting the metal underground and everything in between, from the classics to the newest releases, since 1987. You can catch the show every Thursday, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. on the FM band. Also, listen to an encore presentation every Saturday. Yes, every Saturday, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the HD2 channel. Sweet Nightmares, only on 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hi, I'm Charles Hightower, host of the R&B Gold Show, 6 p.m. till 8, right here on KPFT, Houston's Community Station. I'll be moving and grooving with all the good classic soul just for you on KPFT, FM, and FM HD1 Houston.
Hello, Houston. This is your forecast for KPFT. Hope you're off to a great Thanksgiving. However, the weather is going to be a little gloomy with showers and thunderstorms, with temperatures falling around 61. For tonight, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, cloudy with a low around 47. And for your Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 60. This is your forecast for KPFT. Have a great day, Houston.
Hey, everybody. Juan Flores inviting you to listen in to Jazz Latino right here on KPFT every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Join Lupita and me for some great Afro-Cuban Latin jazz right here on Houston's Community Station.